Hello and welcome to Platforms for Future. This podcast is about building and scaling B2B platform ventures to help you to accelerate and de-risk your journey with practical tips and insights. In our conversations, we talk to founders, executives, and experts, uncovering what they experienced and learned building their ventures. But we also cover new trends like ecosystem strategies, IoT and data platforms, Web3 and sustainability. This podcast is complementary to our Platform Innovation Kit toolset and the Platform Academy, where you can find more tools and learning opportunities for you and your team. For more information, please visit platforminnovationkit.com. And now, enjoy today's conversation.
So hello and welcome to this new episode of our podcast, Platforms for Future. I'm Nathalie Dumas-Lamborghini, and I'm here with my favorite co-host, Matthias Walter. And today, Matthias, it's a special day for you. So let me wish you a happy birthday.
Thank you very much. Merci beaucoup.
And for this special day, we also have a special guest, the founder of Circulania, Mr. Friedrich Fries-Henrich. So hello and welcome, and sorry for my poor German accent.
Thank you very much. Thanks for inviting me, and happy birthday as well.
Thank you. What a pleasure to have this kind of podcast and on my birthday. Thank you very much for this chance.
So let's get straight into it. And Friedrich, I will ask you if you could introduce yourself and also introduce Circulania.
Sure. Thank you. My name is Friedrich Fries-Henrich. I studied engineering and business and later worked in several corporations, and mainly in project management and manufacturing, and as a consultant in procurement. And after that, in 2019, I founded Circulania for what is, I call it, the industrial circular economy. So to establish material flow of secondary raw materials. So these materials, which we usually don't see and which are usually very difficult to reach and to buy.
Okay, so can you give, just so that it gets a bit more concrete, can you give examples of the type of materials that you're talking about?
Yes, sure. So maybe you can imagine that every industry and every factory has a product or products that they want to produce. But on the way to these, or during these processes, everything which is not intended to become a product is either a byproduct or a waste. This can be packaging, plastics, this can be in steel or metals production, can be the slag on top of it. In foundries, it could be sand and also other slags or sludges, which you have in, for example, in chemical industries, which are usually a mixture of several chemicals. And or to give another example, also in water cleaning and water circulation, there are also sludges. There are also lots of wastes in the water to prepare it for reuse again, which are then separated.
So can you also maybe give some examples of, so that's for the offering side, I suppose, but for the user side, which type of companies are using these type of byproducts? So who are you connecting?
That's a very special story about Circulania as well. So we started with the intention of creating a marketplace because we saw that there are several byproducts from industries. So my co-founder and me, we were supplying steel production, so steel plants. And we saw that several byproducts from the steel making process can be used in other industries or in agriculture as well. And that they are sold, partially it is not clear which market it goes. And if on the other side, if you want to buy it, it was very difficult to get it, to get a price and to evaluate which quality is worth how much. So we thought, I got the feeling it's very difficult to reach these products. It's very hard to Google them to find something for it. So I thought this market is not working properly. And the easiest way to make such markets work is to create online marketplace. So with a total transparency for volumes, for qualities, and for prices. And then to make this market work properly after offer and demand. And that is how we started. That's what we came across. We visited many companies and presented this idea, and they all liked it very much. But it's, as you might imagine, it's very conservative industries. So nobody said no, and nobody said yes. They all liked the idea, and nobody wanted to work with us. We even knew some of these byproducts. We knew the qualities, and we told them we know even where you sell them, and we know that you could get more money for it. So just let us sell them online. And everybody was very reluctant and didn't want to, even just for a try, to sell something. So we didn't understand it at that time. Later, it came clear to me that it's corporations, and usually byproducts and wastes are sold in procurement. And procurement, the people in procurement are not measured by how much they sell. So there's no bonus for them if they sell byproducts for a little bit more. There's no interest for them to earn more money with their byproducts or their wastes, or to save money in getting rid of the wastes.
Yeah, this sounds a bit strange, because when we talk to a lot of companies, or when you look at the news, a lot of big corporations, they establish a kind of a chief of sustainability, and they announce a lot of sustainability programs and sustainable strategies to get CO2 neutral and so on. So I assume taking care of your waste should be an integrated part of those kind of sustainability strategies. But but you said, okay, when you talk to those procurement departments and head of procurements, they are not measured. Do you think there's a kind of a missing link between those strategies and ambitions and how they actually act?
Yeah, definitely. We saw that. So later in an accelerator program, one coach said it pretty blunt. When some other company came up with a great product, and then they were asked, yeah, but what is the advantage? And they said, yeah, it's more sustainable. And he said, that's great. So now you can approach all corporations and you find the one person in the company that gets a bonus for buying more sustainable products. And then you can sell it to this person. That was, for me, I still remember it. And so we, even with one corporation, we were talking on a level of the board. We were talking with a board member. And they said, this is very important. This is a great idea. We should do that. And in that case, she forwarded it to one of the colleagues, was vice president. And he said, yes, okay, we will have a look for some materials, and then we can discuss that. And there was never something. So we called again and we asked, so did you find something? Is there something? Yes, but we have so much other things to do right now. We have some problems and we are not sure. So the one thing is, you want to be more sustainable. You want to save carbon dioxide. And that's pretty easy right now, because you can measure your emissions and you can try to reduce the emissions. On the other side, this how much waste you create, that's something that is measured, yes, but you have no direct you have costs to landfill it or to burn it or somehow to deal with the waste. But that's already in the budget. So if you find something better, it's nice. If you don't find anything, yes, it's in the budget, because it's just part of the production. And if we come across and say you can save on the waste, that's usually not the key focus if you have a look for your markets, for your products, for maybe competition. And then on the other side, on carbon dioxide. By saving on how you treat your waste, or even recycle your waste, get it back into the industrial cycle, that is something you need to calculate, but that is not something that you get that you need to pay for if you don't do that.
Yeah, at the beginning we also said Circulania helps you to turn your waste into a product. Is this also maybe connected to your strategy, how to sell Circulania to those corporates and say, hey, we are not taking care of your waste, but we are creating another product for you, which you with what you can earn money. So kind of a strategy, instead of selling things, you can, or kind of repurchase, resell, or whatever you already produced with the waste, and you get run into some troubles with the procurement department. Maybe you now talk to the business development guys and to the sales department and say, hey, you can sell a new product which you already have produced. Could be a different kind of strategy. Well, how do you solve those problems with the procurement departments?
That was our second step. So after a while, we found some companies and they said, yeah, we might have something here. It's a waste. We pay a lot of money for it and we don't know what to do with it. So maybe you can find a solution. So the most difficult materials. And we were having a look on these materials. We were evaluating many processes, how to try to find or to valorize these materials. And that takes a lot of time. It's usually for every material. It's a project on its own. And we found some solutions and then we proudly came back and said, so now we have something and you can do that. And we presented a process. We said, you can you collect these wastes, you have to ship them somewhere, so then it's getting processed, and then it's maybe being processed a second time, and then it's a product, and you can sell it again. Then the second thing we learned, there's no interest in earning money with that, because it's not the product of the company, and they don't want to establish a new field of sales. It's not one thing that is a strategic target of them to sell their wastes. So it's not a part that's really considered, or it's not something that's really considered part of the corporation. And they said, you can do that. You take the waste. We don't want to work on that. We don't want to create a new department just to work with it. You take it and you can do that. And that's how we started. That's how we made this business work. And then we said, okay, so we will show it works. We will sell these materials and we will establish this business and establish this industrial circular economy.
So you have kind of a two-step go-to-market. First, you have to show the suppliers of the waste that you can actually make business out of it, and then they kind of build the business stream officially, or they still give it to you and they don't want to hear about it.
That's something that we observed for maybe one and a half years now in several companies, that there is an interest to find something for it, also in maybe having a look for materials and some approaches to circular economy. So usually there are consultants, specialists in one industry, and they are going around and then creating concepts and maybe also creating value streams for the materials. That's something that we do as well. And then mostly ending up by with the easy solution for the company, just by offering a better price or just by offering lower cost for these wastes or byproducts. And then we do the business. And that was the second value stream after we totally crashed into reality. We had a nice business concept, a business model, and we said on this marketplace will be very easy and everything can be sold there, or the companies can sell their byproducts. And then after we learned there's no intention of doing that, although it would be profitable, then we came to the second step. Okay, so we must be active. We must show there is something, there is a market, it's working, and that's also feasible to do that. And that's still our intention, because we want to operate, well, marketplace, now it's a rather a platform. So we are establishing these businesses, these new value chains for the materials. And then after a few years, our intent is to step back again, to tell these companies there is a supply chain, there is a value chain. We give it back to you. You can sell your material. You can do all that via our platform.
Okay. So that was what I was trying to clarify. Your first step is that you have to build the supply chain, because there isn't one, but your intention is then to withdraw from the supply chain or from a part of the supply chain and let the companies generate some business from their waste eventually.
Yes, that's still our intention.
Yeah,
there are several big advantages in doing so. And for us, we wanted to digitize industries, heavy industries, which are far away from that right now. And it's difficult if we would buy material, if we would ship material, store material. So then it's very asset heavy with the company, and we need lots of people to also to manage all that. So we want to digitize more and better. So we want to show that. We want to establish also new value chains, and then again, leave it to the market. And just so that's also one strategic consideration that we made for a very long time. If you offer a marketplace or a platform where several peers come together, and at the same time, you are part of that, you're operating within this marketplace, I think it's difficult for you to show that you're really neutral, that you're really not taking part in that business for yourself. So in the end, it's also about credibility in the market. And if we want to offer a marketplace, then we definitely need to stay out of the businesses.
Yeah, so it sounds like you tried to solve the chicken egg problem. So the chicken egg problem of any every marketplace faces by first focusing on the supply side, but then you figured out it's not really the supply side, it's more the demand side. Now you take those raw materials, create some kind of or turn it into secondary raw materials and sell them to the buyer side. So you're really acting as an active seller to the buyer side. Is this correct?
That's correct. Yes. Yes. If well, it always depends on the company that's providing the materials. And what we saw so far, most companies don't want to work or want to put so many efforts and resources on that. So then we are working, we're coming from the supply side. It's very difficult to connect these companies. So to connect a company that has a specification that's buying some material, and on the other side to show that there's a waste or a byproduct that can be valorized to fit these specifications. So that's also something like a translation from two languages that we have to do, that we need to do, by also putting in the right processes and showing in the end we can reach these specifications.
I think this is the technical part of your platform and marketplace, so really understanding the waste. So waste is a kind of a bad name, but it's kind of a raw material, but you need to better understand what is the raw material, what is how, I don't know how clean is the raw material, and how can you against some specifications and norms and whatever, and then you can specify it and can resell it. So how do you do that? How do you understand the waste and turn the waste into a product?
So to me, well, as you know, in German, the word waste has rather difficult connotation, negative connotation. And I think the same is in English. A waste is something negative that you want to get rid of. And also it's a legal term. So I try to differentiate, not to differentiate, and call it material. And then we can say it's a primary raw material, it's a virgin raw material, and a waste is rather maybe proven raw material that was used already and has proven its functionality or use utility. And so that's one thing. According to regulations, we need to create or to stop the status of waste by processing it. And that's also difficult. That's sometimes complicated. And that's why I say, from my point of view, it's something that's perfect for digitization, for taking it online. Because then, if you have something that's considered a waste, if it's not a product of your production, if it's not the intent of your production, then it's basically a waste. If it's a waste, you need to somehow dispose it. And then you need a company that is that can use, that is registered to use this waste, to deal with this waste, to transport it. Then you need a company that is allowed, registered to take this waste and to process it. And then after this, if you find all the companies that can actually, that are allowed to handle this waste, then in the end, you need the local authorities, the environmental department of the local authority, that is confirming that this waste, after this processing step, is not a waste anymore.
Dear listeners, I hope you enjoy our podcast and you can learn more about building and scaling a successful platform business. I'm Matthias, CEO of Fastbreak One. And as you know, we at Fastbreak One are platform entrepreneurs by heart. Since over 20 years, we are building new platforms, and this makes us one of the most experienced platform venture builders around the globe. If you are a corporate and you tried out different strategies, consultants, IT partners, but your platform initiative struggles to scale, please check out our assessment services. For example, we work closely together with a leading insurance company who tried to establish a platform for 2 years, but the results were below expectations and the risk to fail was very high. Within 1 month, we helped them to understand the bottlenecks and created a step-by-step plan to scale. Today, we are working very closely with the company and the platform became a market leader. Yes, we are no consultants. We are entrepreneurs and we love to share the risk and go full in building new platform ventures. Learn more about our experience and our practices of work at our website www.fastbreak.one or send us an email to contact@fastbreak.one. And now let's go back to the conversation.
I think I totally understand. I'm with you on your definition and not wanting to use the word waste, because in fact, when you think about it, waste is something that yourself is not using and not necessarily something negative, but that's some, you know, that could be used in another way. I find really interesting when I'm hearing that you had to actually build the supply chain for the supplier side, or the supplier of those raw materials, for them to be able to join the platform. To me, it makes me think of, you know, when companies or people express a need, sometimes they express a need, but in fact, the real need is not expressed. And here, they express a need. Okay, we want to be sustainable. But actually, the real need is to build a supply chain for them to be able to then be sustainable. And in a platform, it's always very, very important to identify on both sides what the real needs are, so that then, you know, both sides actually come and use the platform. And I think that's what you've done through this through what you've learned. So I find that very interesting in that way, because I guess they didn't express it like that initially for you. They just said, yeah, it would be nice to be sustainable, right?
Yes, of course, for everybody it's nice to be sustainable, and everybody wants to do that, or exactly, claims to do that, but nobody's paying €1 more for it, or $1. And that's something that we had to learn as well. And that is why our benchmark is always, what is the primary product that's bought, that's procured by the company? What are the specifications and what is the price? So we have to match quality, price, and quality and price mostly. And we can do that. We can do that with a secondary raw material or with a proven material. We can do that. And that's what we showed now several times. And the fun fact about that, it's even more sustainable. There are less carbon dioxide emissions on that.
So, I think it's also a third point. I think it's availability. It's not just the price and quality, but also availability. When I look at my history and I worked at bigger companies and they purchased material, they also looked for a secondary source, just to ensure that the material, the raw material they buy is also available from a second source or third source or fourth source. So what you are creating here is like, you said it's kind of virtual value chains, because the secondary raw material, which is maybe matching the quality of the primary raw material, is coming from a different source. Someone nobody had on the radar, because they used the same primary material, but not sold the waste. Now they can sell the waste, and now they become also a new supplier. So the value chain you create, or you create a kind of a marketplace for much more suppliers of the same material, maybe with the same quality and maybe also with a good price. And so you create much more opportunities to source material. And I think this is something also which is really, really important nowadays when you look at the current political situations and how we are connected with all the ecosystems we are in. Having such a kind of a marketplace and platform which helps me to create endless opportunities of supply, this is also I think a very big value proposition of your platform.
Totally, yeah. I even stopped talking about it, but that was my main part. So by creating this industrial circular economy, we make the European Union, at least to a certain degree, we make them more independent from raw material imports. And that is crucial. That's totally crucial. The European Commission created a report with 30 most critical raw materials that are imported. And if you have a look on that, it's terrible to see, because most materials are sourced from China. Most of these critical materials are sourced from outside the European Union. And then most important country is China. And in many cases, China has more than 50% or more than 40% of the world market in that. So the European Union is to a very high degree depending on Chinese exports. And there are already examples from 2011 or 12, I think, when rare earths suddenly became a thing, when people learned what rare earths are, and that suddenly the price rose by, I think within 2 or 3 months, by 400%. And suddenly companies became aware that they need a lot of rare earths, where rare earths are all needed and used. And then after these few months, there was a restriction from China. They didn't export as many rare earths as needed. So you need them in every motor, in every engine that needs a magnet. And suddenly that was a problem for the whole world. And suddenly everybody was talking about it. What can we do against this? And why did we create such a situation? So now it's 2022, exactly 10 years later. And we see that on other raw materials. That was our point, making European Union more independent and at the same moment using the materials that we already have here on this continent. And maybe you remember from your time at big companies or corporations, the discussion about how can we save costs. We can maybe nearshore it, we can offshore it, buy it somewhere else. But the advantages of not even nearshoring, of having it maybe domestically or within the European Union, the materials, that is crucial. And now I can really discuss that, and even buyers are listening to that and realize that this is a huge advantage, because the material is there, it's available every time. Although I need to say recently, the demand rose so crazily that even we are sold out at some materials.
So that's why for me the Circulania is really a kind of a triple bottom line company. So you are, of course, do it for profit and you create a business, but you also have a benefit for the planet, because you reuse material, and you have also a benefit for the people, because it creates freedom. So if you are not dependent or not that highly dependent on your suppliers from maybe offshoring or whatever, so this creates kind of freedom, because you are more, you can also more rely on suppliers which are local, nearshore or whatever. So this creates more freedom within the ecosystem. So I think this is a very good example of how Circulania really creates a triple bottom line benefit for a lot of stakeholders here. Not just yourself.
Thank you. Yes, it's added up. And I need to say, from our considerations, if you have a look on political side or on big policies, and if you have a look on material side, on demand side, on supply side, I always came to the same point. We need Circulania. We need to use our materials that are already proven for their primary use and can be used a second and a third time. And if we talk about second, third time, and maybe the quality gets worse, if you think about metal, so steel, aluminum, it can be glass as well. It can be used infinitely. It can be always molten again and used again. So, and you even save a lot of energy by creating aluminum from aluminum scrap instead of bauxite or importing bauxite. And that's something where, for me, it's a no-brainer, really, to say, why don't we do that? And yeah, in Germany, the recycling rate for aluminum is 93%, I think. That's quite good. It's not in every European country. So still, there is quite some potential, also in saving costs, in being more profitable, and also in closing the circle more.
I was wondering, Friedrich, what we've been talking a lot about different raw materials, which it seems to me the more you are trying to tackle, the more complex it is, because they're all different. They will have different, transport methods, evaluation of quality, of price, whatever. So how did you actually select some types of raw materials, or you went for everything? Sounds like you went for everything, but it seems quite hard.
Thank you very much. So at least one is understanding my daily problems. Yes, we had to focus, and we focused in the beginning. As I mentioned, my co-founder and me, we were supplying steel industries and also some other industries. So we were dealing with these minerals. Also minerals and byproducts from steel industry and to steel industry. And that's how we started. And we thought, that's easy. We know all the players. We know the materials, so we can start with that. We didn't consider these industries are not the most digitized or most innovative industries. What we don't do today is plastics. That has gained a lot of momentum, and there are a lot of players working on that. And also, it's not our key expertise. We do not deal with scrap, because that's a very special market that's also established, and there are also other companies trying to digitize it. So we are working on minerals where we see there's still a lot of potential. They're not even online, so it's a little pioneer work. We are trying to find materials, to find people, to find phone numbers of materials that are not even known today, that are maybe used, maybe disposed, or maybe used for a very low value application.
And so looking forward, so you said some minutes ago, you are now acting more like a seller. You're creating those virtual value chains, but not really as a marketplace at the moment. So you took a step back and said, okay, now we need to do it by ourselves. This shows how hard it is to establish yourself in the market and to create some cases. So what is your plan looking into the future? How you want to go on with Zirkulania and go the next steps until you can reopen up the marketplace? So
the next target is scaling. We started with having a look for new purposes for materials in different industries. And usually you have industry experts or process experts. So this silo thinking. We brought a nice council of experts together and discussed with them the first products or materials that we had, and discussed and developed value chains with them. So this cannot go on forever. And we have many materials. Sometimes, as I said, it's always a project. Sometimes you can solve it within a few weeks. Sometimes it takes, for one material, it took us more than 1.5 years to find something, to find a value chain that's really working. And that's the next step, to digitize it. So we are creating right now an artificial intelligence that is finding that for us. That is quite complex work, but we are doing it step by step. So material by material, finding new value chains and checking it. That's very nice, because then it allows us to scale rapidly with materials. The other thing is we develop material by material. So if you have one byproduct or waste stream and you find a solution for it, you can do it for all these waste streams that are similar to it. And that is when the network effects kicks in, when we suddenly see it. So there's somebody who wants it, who needs also maybe similar products or materials. Then we find other companies that are creating similar materials. And suddenly you can spread out. And the more companies you have that are either supplying or buying or both on the marketplace, the easier it gets.
And you said about AI. So how exactly is AI helping you here to to make this, to create this matchmaking?
So maybe I can explain it a little in detail. If you have a material, that's the first step. If somebody calls us, some company writes us, we have some waste, can you do something with it? We ask for a chemical analysis. For the amount, chemical analysis, is it a waste or not? And what you do right now, do you earn money on it? Do you pay? And then we have a look on the chemicals which are inside. And then we already find some first direction where it could go. And then we start with that and have a look for different industries where it might be needed on the supply side, on the input side. So then we need to go on. We need to ask, because sometimes it can be very complex. When the chemicals are right, but their mineral structure is wrong, then you can still not use it because it's the right chemicals, but they are connected. The atoms are connected in the wrong way. So it can be very, very complex. So that's something where I say, again, it's complex. Let computers solve it. By finding chemical reactions, connecting process steps, so any processing, chemical processing, mechanical processing, thermal processing, so burning it, and then finding out how we can reach the specification. So we have specifications of materials that are bought. We need many, many more. And basically the idea is to have all specifications of all companies in Europe to know what they buy, what they want, and then to find out how we can supply that, how we can find materials that we can process to reach exactly the specifications.
You mentioned Europe. You're working across Europe, or you're in Germany only for now?
We wanted to focus on Germany. We wanted to focus on steel minerals. That's how we started. And then within a few weeks, it was Austria, it was Benelux, it's France. So we realized, of course, in the beginning, you need to focus. And the more you focus, the better for a platform. But then it was simply not possible. So we tried to focus now on materials and to keep that together. But it's also nice to see that with other countries, it works as well. And it's also makes it easier for scaling there. Across materials and not across countries, or focusing on materials and not focusing on countries.
And don't you have maybe some, depending on the material, don't you have some added complexity in going through the borders with some, I don't know, specific regulations on products or chemical products or...
I say, Natalie, you really understand me and my problems. So, you know, European Union. Yeah. If you want to import or export a waste, an hazardous waste, you need to fill out some forms. You need to announce that. And then, yeah, usually it works. But you also need to have companies, so logistics companies that are allowed to transport such materials. And then it's not only European Union, there's even by, I think, OECD made some framework on how to deal and how to transport wastes across borders. But it's not only across country borders, it's also within Germany, across the several states, then materials are considered differently. And sometimes you need to announce that. And that makes it quite difficult for us because we have materials sometimes from Belgium, from Netherlands. And then you also need to ask who is transporting it and how is it considered, where, and can we get it? So then through three countries by once. And you need to find the right legislation, whether you just need to announce it for simple wastes, or you can just transport them cross-border, or you have hazardous waste. And even that depends. Not only, it's not written on the material. You need to find that out, what it is.
Yeah. It sounds like that it's not a chicken egg problem, which is causing some troubles. It's not the technology causing some troubles, but it's more like the legal situation and the mindset of and understanding of the companies out there to really embrace circular economy, sustainability, and remove a lot of barriers. So to make it really, really easy to enable a circular economy. I think for a circular economy marketplace like you, it's more like it's not anymore chicken and egg. It's also chicken, egg, and I don't know, lion or whatever. So a third animal you need to face it. You need to attack and to solve.
So today, I think we were very enthusiastic and had clear things in mind. What you know from the consumer side that there were e-commerce shops. So when did you buy the first thing in the internet? That's quite some time ago. Then you saw marketplaces. You buy something on one domain, but it's not the domain that sells it. It's somebody who's offering it. So eBay was great to sell all your old stuff. And you think, well, that's quite easy. We just take eBay there and put in some materials. It's even there. Even you can go to Alibaba and buy some materials, and hopefully they will arrive. But we totally underestimated who we are dealing with, that in business to business, it's a totally different thing. And although I think all the people know it from their private life, it doesn't mean that they are ready to use it or to transfer that to their business life. So today, I think it would have been easiest to start with an online shop. And here's Sokolania, and we are selling materials. And in a way, we are doing that. And then trying to establish that to make people aware that they can buy materials online, and then offering some also advantages and making them realize I can buy things online, and I will do that now, and maybe it's easier, and so on. Then changing the mindset of the industries a little. And then in a second step, maybe starting a marketplace, but also establishing all the systems, because basically we are not a marketplace. We are in a very broad way a platform, and what I like to consider ourselves as the virtual production network. And that's ultimately our target, our goal, to consider or to see Europe as a huge factory or a huge refinery, where you have many, many players virtually connected. And then if you have some material in Spain and you find some company that needs exactly this material or something very similar to it that is maybe in Italy or France, then to find the right processors somewhere on that way and to ship it there. And that is something that we are doing right now. That's in Benelux, France, what we are doing there. But that's exactly how it works. There are always local processors who are there, who know already what they are doing, and we just want to utilize them more to show them there is more business, and can you do that with a different material or with more material what you're doing already. And you see that there's a lot of education, a lot of mindset change, and also creating a kind of map of these processes, of these companies. So sometimes I like to compare it to Google Maps in the beginning. Well, you could not just Google all the pizza shops or all the small companies. They were visited. Teams were visiting them and asking them, do you want to not be on Google Maps? We can put you online.
Yeah, so it sounds there's still a lot of, there's a long way to go to establish sustainable platforms. And so I think you can be very proud of yourself and your team that you are created already such a nice platform and marketplace, and that you are also very brave in taking the challenge. Try to educate the market, try to change mentality and mindset and so on. So, and we are very lucky to have you in our podcast. So thank you for sharing your journey with us and also the listeners. Coming to an end, so you are a young leader and you are establishing Sokolania in the market. What would be maybe your single most important advice as a leader to other leaders, maybe also trying to establish something like a circular economy platform in the market? So what kind of recommendation you can give them?
If it's business to business, I might even have two recommendations.
So the one's also is... fine.
Yeah, even better. It's Matthias' birthday after all, right?
So, you can wish as many as you want. So quite often I see scientists who are founding a company based on their results or solutions that they want to implement in the market. So I would say if you start with such things, and even more important, if you start with a marketplace or a platform, focus. Just one thing, very simple, start with that. Of course, you need to have a big idea, a big vision maybe somewhere, but start with the easiest thing possible, that it's so stupid for you that you think that's embarrassing to do that. And the other thing is simple, the simplest solution that you can imagine. It's not an advantage to have a more complex solution. It's important to get into the market with a simple solution. And for everything else, I'll leave it to you, Matthias.
No, thank you very much. Sounds very good. Focus and simplicity always is good, and reminds me on my birthday cake. My daughter made a birthday cake for me. It was very focused, simple, but it tastes very, 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 very well. So, yeah, thank you, Friedrich, for joining our podcast and sharing your journey with us. And cross our fingers that you can further establish and realize all of your ambitions with Circulania. And maybe in 1-2 years, we can repeat this conversation and see where you are with your platform. Thank you very much for joining.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for inviting me. And looking forward to our next talk next year, maybe.
Thank you, Friedrich. Thank you, Matthias.
Thank you.